Street Studios, downtown Des Moines. You all, live from the bathroom.
Life in the past. You're listening. I can't help what goes on. Hey, you're listening to Life from the Path. My name is Ben Foost. It's going to be a rough day. You better be prepared for a rough day because that's what it's going to be about.
It's mayhem.
Where did it say Locust Street Studios? It's been like 3 years.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Well, no, not 3 years. 2 years. It's been a while.
It's been a while.
In either case.
I thought about that actually on the way here tonight because usually I would leave a little bit too late and have to drive a little bit too fast and get in just before the show started, and I thought that was going to happen tonight. And I only live two blocks away.
Yeah, they're literally minutes away. Under
I'm
five.
Like, this is like the good old days driving downtown.
That one was – so it's I always feel bad about that because – so we used to get to that studio at like 9:30 or so, and the show started at 10. Or no, it used to go from 9 to 11.
That's yeah, right. It was a two-hour gig.
Yeah, it was like 9 to 11. And so I get there at 8:30, and we would sneak – there was another show on before us. It was an interesting program. So they would get off.
They were creepers, let's be honest.
Yeah, they were creepy. Yeah. And so we'd have like 5 minutes to get in and fire up the show. And so I told my wife when we were setting up the studio here, kind of here in our current space, I said, hey, man, it's going to be our own space. I won't have to get there like a half an hour early. All right? We'll be able to, because everything will be set up. It'll be our studio. No one else will be in there. So we'll just be able to kind of walk in, fire it up, and be done. And it'll be awesome.
Yeah.
And that, I don't think I've gotten here like any later than 30 to 40 minutes before the show.
Yeah. That's because me and Troy and Dan don't come in until 5 till.
I mean, during the week, I push all the knobs.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, someone's got to do the work around here, you know? Thanks, Ben.
All right.
It's the Ben Show.
Thanks for it is. Hey, sorry about that. Here's the deal. We were at the Christmas from the Path event, okay? We're there, and I'm supposed to be emceeing this deal. You know, hey, Christmas from the Path, blah, 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 blah. So it turns out that the guy that was supposed to play bass isn't going to play bass, so I ended up playing bass for the second event. And when I really have to separate duties because I can't get my head on correctly. When I have to speak and otherwise also have to like play bass or do something else, things get real rough. And so I get up there and I was trying to handle the announcement duties while also playing bass. And I may have said, this has been, I'm the host of Life from the Path. And then I corrected it and said, one of the hosts from Life from the Path. And apparently that wasn't good enough for Mike, who has to be recognized via name.
He basically called the show Ben from the Path. It was outrageous.
I'm the guy on the path, all right?
By the way, I produced the show.
Welcome to the Ben from the Path show. This is Ben Foost, your host.
Yeah, so anyway, you don't know what you're missing out until you see the Ben from the Path program. We had to cut it down from 9 to 11 because it was too much Ben. Now we're down to an hour.
All Ben, all the time. Mike was indignant for the rest of the night. What? I wasn't acknowledged.
Yeah, I was that way. Yeah.
You didn't even acknowledge me by my fake name. Like, that's how bad it was. No one has called me Engeldinger in a long time.
I don't use your real name.
I know. And Boova is an entity that has been created by Live from the Path. I would have hoped that he would have been mentioned.
No. No.
Mike, you're supposed to be on my side.
Interesting sidebar.
There is a vote.
I've been voted. Okay, cool.
You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org, broadcasting every Monday night live on the net from 10 to 11. It's a kid-safe time, which means that your kids should not be listening to it. They should be safe elsewhere. And then you, Jesus man, should be hanging out for the show just before you hit your Bible reading and go to bed. If you're catching it live, you're looking at it at on livefromthepath.org. If you're listening to it on KTIA, you're listening to it Saturday nights at 7. And if you're catching to it on the YouTube, it could be years in the past. I mean, this could have happened years ago. But we're glad that you Skyped onto the show. So we're gonna be talking about a couple things tonight. I think the first thing we're going to hit is it possible to be a pessimistic Jesus man? Like a pessimistic Christian, is there such an animal? Does the Bible give enough credence or room for you to be designed pessimistic? I don't know. We're going to flesh it out a little bit. I think there's a couple misconceptions about pessimism in general, And but I also think that there are some people that say, hey, man, I'm just the way I am. And that's not the truth. That's just the sinful way that you are. And you need to repent of that and do something different. So we're going to talk about that. We also got questions on Dear Life from the Path. It's where we get some we take some advice that has already been given from a secular source. And then basically we just try to say, I don't know about that. I think here's what the Bible would splay out. We'll talk about that. And then we might also be talking about some goals for Life from the Path in 2014. And not the show in general, because frankly, the ratings couldn't get any better.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if there's three people watching, there's three people having a good time.
Yeah.
And so I don't expect that to go up or down. I expect it to stay steady based on my forecast. And I asked my mom if she'd keep watching. She said, yeah. And so I feel like that three is going to stay solid. So we're not talking about the growth of the show or social impact. We're basically talking about what can we do in 2014. And this is not like a pious religious list, like I want to stop five homeless dudes on the way in and try to share Jesus, okay? If you want to do that, that's fine. That's not the kind of goals that we're talking about.
Yeah.
We're just talking about making some waves in life and being part of some stuff. And so we're going to go through that.
Yeah, I think that sounds all right. Well, so actually, do you want to hear mine?
Yeah.
Okay, here I have a few. I had a very long drive back and forth to Texas this past week. And so, you know, as you're driving along, your mind kind of wanders off into weird directions. And so things that I feel like I really would like to do in 2014. And here's the A number one, top of my list, is I want to make one of my own pieces of clothing, my own apparel, like by hand. So, like...
Does that mean you can't use a sewing machine?
Right, no sewing machine. I want to hand sew like a T-shirt or something.
I mean, is a poncho cheating? Like if you just cut the
cut
hole out
on the sheet?
No, you could do that, but that's not up to the standard that I want.
Okay,
my daughter I'm a 16-year-old knitted herself a scarf. She'd never knitted in her. I'm like, she looks like grandma, but she's totally getting into this.
Yeah, so
it's beautiful,
and that's what made me think of it. Is my wife was knitting on the way down. And I was looking at that, and I look. First of all, who came up with that? Because that's wild.
Yeah,
that's with the sticks and the yarns.
And
yeah,
Kristen
that's
Turner
crazy
and...
looking. And then I thought, I don't need to knit for a living, but I wouldn't mind knitting something.
Maybe a little side cash.
Just something.
Here's what's unfair about just being in the radio listening audience: that you're missing my look of agreement / concern, because I'm shaking my head and like, yeah, yeah, and but my eyebrows are saying, what? What? I
Did
wish I would knit more.
No. Like I said, I don't need to knit for a living, but I wouldn't mind knitting one thing. But that's on a sidebar. I really just want to make a shirt. I want to make my own T-shirt. I want to hand sew it by picking material out from somewhere and finding a pattern and cutting it out and sewing it and wearing it around. That's what I want to do.
I didn't see that coming.
A number one, 2014, get my own shirt. And here's the deal. It can't be crap either. I don't want a junk ball shirt.
You're going to have to do it like eight times then.
I don't care. It has to. Here's the deal. I will never sew again after that. I will make my shirt, one shirt. It will be awesome. And then I will not sew again.
They've got them at Goodwill. You can get it pretty reasonably.
I don't want to pay for
one. Here's the thing is you're really putting the boots to the saying because you've changed it from master or jack of all trades, master of one to it would be jack of no trades. Master of none.
Master it once.
No, you didn't master it. You just did it one time and escaped.
That's fine.
And plus, it took you eight times to do it. You didn't master anything.
I don't care. I just have to do it one time.
All right, but list one, Ben for 2014, A is make own clothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I originally wanted to be a cobbler, a shoe cobbler. I thought, what if you could make your own shoe? That would be awesome. But I decided
Hey, here's the thing. People are currently doing this. I don't understand why you'd want to do it.
Companies are doing that. Nobody owns a Ben Original, a shoe.
No, that's true.
But I looked at what a shoe man, a cobbler has to have. I mean, he's got like a canister of stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel
yeah.
like that's too much. I can't invest that much into it.
Actually, you know, I thought, I'm a fool. Here's what I did. I thought I was going to start tuning pianos. Because I thought, yeah, that's pretty easy, right? Like, I mean, I can tune a guitar. I can tune a piano.
Yeah.
And so I decided I'm going to start – I'm going to buy a kit. So I get on the net and I start looking around. They want like $150 for the kit. And but they have, you know, more advanced kits. And I think, well, I don't want people pegging me as the amateur here.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to buy like a $200 kit. Make it,
exactly.
And then I have to beat it up. I did that when I first started my construction job. I didn't want people making fun of me for being the guy with brand new tools. So I bought brand new tools and then I took them to the driveway and ran them over with a truck. I mean, for a couple hours, I just kept driving over them, driving over them, driving over them. Because people will literally make for their, like, nice tools, newbie. And I can't put up with that crap.
Yeah,
and so
yeah, yeah.
So I did the same thing with my baseball mitts when I got new baseball gloves for Little League. I mean, I would just sit there and beat the tar out of them for days before I let anyone see them because I didn't want them making fun of me for having new stuff.
That
but anyway,
awesome.
Long story short, piano tuning's harder than I thought. Or there's some very hierarchical folks who want to make you think it's harder than it looks and that you shouldn't even risk it. They're like, if you don't know what you're doing, don't even risk it. You'll break the piano beyond repair. And I'm like, well, if it's in that bad of shape, I feel like, you know, it's probably going to break anyway, you know?
What's the basic concept of piano tuning? I don't think you're going to break it beyond repair.
Little Titan, little, what is it, like 90 bucks? I can't remember. We've only done it once.
To have it tuned?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I thought it was more than that. I was a couple hundy.
See, plan a couple of those a day?
You'd have it. That's the life.
Yeah.
Get a minivan and
an hour?
A refillable coffee cup. You're done.
Actually, you also need a blazer and a shirt that buttons down one button but with no tie.
Right on. No undershirt.
I think you should do it.
Or maybe clothes that you've made yourself.
Hey, you ain't getting one, because I'm making one. Then I can't get fatter.
Did you have another one, or was that the only one?
No, it's on the tongue. I'll share it again. Boova, what do you got? What do you want to do in 2014?
What do I want to do in 2014?
Is it stop repeating questions you've been asked? Is that the top of the list?
That's actually been a long-lost dream of mine. A couple of years ago, people started bringing up, dude, did you notice that you repeat everything that people say to you in an inquisitive manner? No.
I said, do I realize I've been repeating everything people say to me? Let me see.
And I stop myself, and I go into tangents on my own, and then no one can follow them. In 2014, what I want to do is I want to finish my weight loss.
You mean quit?
Yeah, I'm gonna quit losing weight.
He's done with it.
This is the last year I want to be on a weight loss plan.
Yeah.
I want to get to a point where I want to maintain my weight now, not just worry about losing a lot. Because I've come to a point where either I need to be like scientifically fascinated by how obese I am, or I really need to lose the rest of the weight because it's no longer like a good thing at any point in time. I'm not just a regular big guy that's like, oh, I'm just a couple pounds overweight. It's not a huge deal. It's not going to kill me. I'm morbidly obese and really need to get it done.
Right.
And this is my 5-year high school reunion coming up in a couple months.
You're not going to that, are you?
I don't know. I haven't decided
yet. Yes, you are. Hey, you totally going.
That pause said it all.
Yeah.
I honestly haven't decided. Yeah. But that's my goal. I really want to get down to a point where I'm no longer worried about losing weight. I want to maintain and get fully healthy. I quit smoking 2 years ago, and I'm ready to be done with this now.
Awesome.
Yep.
Yeah.
Knitting my own clothes.
I'll wait till I lose weight so I don't have to buy so much yarn.
It'll
it'll save me big money.
You guys have no idea. That's one of the biggest reasons I want to lose weight is because there are so many extra add-ons for the sizes that you go up. If you ever look to get a size, go XL, same price. Double XL, $2 more. Triple XL, $3 more. And it keeps going up.
And the styles get worse.
Right. It's like, so what do you guys have in my size? It's like, nothing.
We have this Sherpa cloak.
We also have a unitard.
We have some bed sheets in the back. Are those going to work for you?
Hey.
Yeah. I really came in here looking for a toga.
You could cut a hole in it and make a poncho.
It's like, so what size are you? Queen? King? It's like, really? Really, dude?
Yeah.
When you walk into a store and say your size and they're like, oh, I've never heard of that one. That's interesting.
they do that?
They make that many X's? It's like, yeah, they actually go up to quite a few X's. Yeah,
I feel like you're not the right person to talk to. Can you find me someone that wants to sell me a shirt?
I'm not going
to
say a specific company, but I go into like mall stores, and I think you guys all know what I'm talking about. And I find it hysterical when I walk in and I ask for my size. And they're all just like, no. No, we don't carry that. I'm just like, oh, cool. Can you, like, order it into the store? Like, that'd be really cool. I really love these jeans. Like, those look really cool. No.
No, yeah. Sir. This is Victoria's Secret, sir. We don't do that here.
We'll have to call Ben Foost.
Yeah, exactly.
He makes all the jeans.
Yeah. No, anything over, like, a 36, and they're like, I think we have, like, one pair of those in the back. They're kind of, like, rotted, and, like, they have cobwebs on them because no one that big comes into the store.
Let me go ask the other big fellow that works here.
Exactly.
Hey, Todd, where do you buy your clothes at?
Not here.
No, not in this store.
This is also a pretzel store. And we don't sell clothes, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
no, okay. So that's my big goal for 2014.
Okay, Troy's going to finish some weight loss. Ben's going to make his own clothes. Dan Hudson.
Oh, man. Oh, I don't know. We started talking about this, and I'm thinking, what's my thing this year? Because we're talking about doing something like out of the ordinary, right? Something that, you know, it's just not part of your thing. Every few years, I'll do something. Like, I started doing gumballs a few years ago, just because, like, well, I'd never done that. And I could actually make money. It was a hobby, you know. And
well, you've been selling and distributing gumballs.
Exactly, exactly. Okay. Yeah, little gumball.
You made it sound like you've just been buying them at random and storing them at your place.
I like that one. I've got a basement full of gumballs.
Never really done this, but sell them all. It's delicious.
So that makes this is a great investment. On the side, and it's fun. It gives something to do on my day off. Last year, I started bicycling, you know, and I did Rag Bride, and it was great fun. I'll probably expand on that, but that's not anything new. I don't know. Honestly, a couple days ago, I started thinking about this, and I don't know what my current thing is. Usually, it has to be something off the wall. It's something that hits me, you know. I don't know if I can sit down and just make something up, you know. I have to ponder that.
Hmm.
Yeah. Because usually, I go in, and I spend more money than I should on it, you know. Like, I buy new tools and run them over in my car or something.
Yeah, actually, I would really like to have seen that conversation. Here's the deal, honey. I'm going to buy gumballs. No. Man, no, let's hear me out. Gumballs.
I usually justify it pretty well. No, see, I'll buy two, and then I'll buy new ones from the stuff I sell in the first two, and it...
Yeah, I've tried that before. Yeah. I don't ever sell nothing. That's terrible.
I have a DJ rig in our garage.
Yeah, that was going to make us thousands of dollars. Thousands.
You guys are my main competition.
Yeah. Here's the deal.
I ran you out of business, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I'm going to build a small house on the back of my property, a guest house.
Huh.
That's my goal this year. For people who need a place to stay that I don't want staying in my main place.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, like, I want to be hospitable, but not super close.
Now, you're in the country. Do you have to you don't have like all the city code things? Hey, I mean, it has to be like livable.
Dan, we don't even want to talk about that city code business. We're just going to build it, and we'll see what they say.
We'll say, the codes?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to build. Here's what I'd really like to get a train, like a caboose, and then just put that back there and then fancy it up. But otherwise, my goal this year is to get a place for either traveling missionaries or wayward family members. That can stay back at the back of my property.
You know what they've been using is shipping containers, like old shipping containers that they would load onto the ships and stuff and ship stuff across the seas.
Yeah.
They were having an abundance of those, and they started turning those into houses.
I think that's the way to live.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to build one out of pallets, but it takes an awful lot of pallets.
What about tires? Can't you do that out of tires?
Sure.
Didn't they have the Boxcar Kids? Wasn't that like a book series back in the day? The Boxcar Kids.
Children.
Boxcar Children.
I don't know.
Something.
I don't know.
Yes, they did have that.
He does gumballs.
What would I know?
We have.
What do you want?
Previously, gumballs and cycling. We have knit my own clothes, build a house, and lose weight. So that's our four.
I'm not done.
Yeah, I got like 10 more.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It's none of your business, though. Not the way you laughed at my boxcar house.
Hey, I didn't laugh at your boxcar house. I was just. Okay. Fine. Yeah, I'm going to do one more. House.
So I'm gonna write a novella in 2014.
Ooh.
I'm gonna knit my own shirt. Well, I'm gonna knit. It's gonna sew. It's gonna look legit.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna write a novella.
I'm not even sure what a novella is.
It's a guy who can't finish a full novel.
Short story kind of deal.
It's like a quitter author.
It's a words with friends word.
An author that quits. You know what? One of my big goals for this show for next year is I'm gonna get a top tier guest. I'm generally in charge of getting guests around here, and I have swung and missed many a guest. I've gotten some very good apology letters and some very firm no thank yous. And I actually had one really, really close, and then we had a scheduling conflict, and then they bailed.
It's gone, yeah.
And like, man, I almost had it. Like, I almost had. I mean, this dude is legit, and actually a pretty cool guy. But I'm gonna get. There's gonna be somebody that's gonna agree to come on this program that is. Way above the scale that we're used to.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's one of my major goals for next year as well.
I had actually thought about taking a class, like a business class or even some type of broadcast class. There's got to be that kind of stuff out there. But I figured that would just ruin the gold.
Yeah. Why would you screw with the formula as successful as this one?
You don't want to taint the oatmeal with that garbage.
Yeah, that's right. How else could you fit four guys in a refurbished bedroom with a big window in it? You know? Nothing says legit like no training. You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. Here's the deal. If you want to check out some previous content, our YouTube channel is full of it, including our caps for sale, which is basically has nothing to do with our own content. We've read a story by another man, and it's our biggest YouTube draw. People show up just to watch it. Ignore our Jesus content completely and just listen to this story. And so, but I mean, we got plenty of segments on there. The full shows are on the YouTube channel. Actually, the best place to find that is directly on the website at livefromthepath.org. So definitely go check that out. We had a couple of things we're going to talk about. Oh, you know what we're going to talk about? We're going to talk about whether it's possible to be a pessimistic Jesus man. Or lady. You could be a pessimistic lady as well. But, like, can you have the love of Christ in your heart and still be a pessimist? You don't really see the upside of things. Kind of.
I suppose whether your pessimism, it depends where it's directed, right? Do you, let me ask you in a specific question. Can you love Jesus and also mistrust people broadly?
Yeah. That's just being honest, isn't it?
Yeah. Does that make you a pessimist?
Well, like here, the kind of person I guess I'm talking about is like you say, hey, let's do this. And they're like, yeah, that'd be great. Except for it's probably going to fall apart at the end. You know what I'm saying? Like they always got to tack on the demise of it or what. Like they always see just like here's the every possible negative thing that come out of it. You know, like, hey, we should let that guy borrow the car. And they're like, yeah, he's probably going to crash it. What are you, a fool? You know what I'm saying? Like, total pessimism. Not like, sure. Or, you know, we should have that guy come over and stay. He's probably going to be here for years. We'll never get rid of him. Okay, well, yeah, that's not what I was thinking. I thought it would just be whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, that kind of pessimism. So, like, can you have that? Is that just being a realist? An aggressive realist? I mean, is there anything wrong with that? Is that okay?
I don't know how you can be consistently pessimistic or negative, kind of a Debbie Downer, and really be living in the joy of Christ. I mean, everybody has their days, and there might be certain things you look at and think, it's just not going to work. I mean, you know, just realism. But if there are some people, that's just their disposition, you know. And I think, you know, boy, someone tell them they're going to heaven, you know. I mean, how can you, like, live through life and be miserable if you know you're going to heaven?
Yeah, don't drag your non-joy over here.
Yeah, I mean.
Now, I see the flip side of this a little bit because I know a lot of people who are critical. Like, they have an attention for things that most people don't see. And so when they bring it up, they're like, why you got to be so pessimistic, you know, like. They say, whatever. How'd the show go? Well, it was pretty good. There's a couple things that kind of got dropped and the sound wasn't right. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're very kind of specific on the things that they noticed and the things that didn't go right. The flow didn't happen. The timing wasn't right.
Sure, yeah.
And they're very honest about that. And some people will say, well, you know, why you always got to brag? Why you going to drag it down? It's like, well, you kind of asked. And, you know, it's true. It's what happened, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I don't think that's the kind of guy I'm talking about. There's some people that take that too far. I'm one of those people. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's times that people just don't want to hear your critical thinking. You know what I'm saying? Like, and sometimes that bolsters on a pride issue. Like, you can be critical and be correct. That's true. But, like, the thought that your opinion needs to be heard all the time, that starts to borderline on people on having a bit of pride with you. But, so there's nothing wrong with being a critical person, you know, a person that analyzes things. But, like, I'm talking about the people that, like, doesn't matter what. Hey, let's, like, you're planning for an event. Let's hold an event here in the park. Oh, it's going to be terrible. People won't know where to park. And then we'll never get enough trash cans. And blah, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're not even being real. These are just phony things, you know? Yeah, they come up with weird scenarios where some guy accidentally poops on the roof of the shelter or something. Like, they're like outrageous scenarios that never are going to happen. And so, like, I guess that's the kind of guy I'm talking about. And I've met a couple people that claim the name of Christ and act like that. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm sure you kind of love Jesus, but, like, in a really downer kind of way that's not fun or accepting the love of Christ, you know?
Yeah, maybe you don't really fully understand who Jesus is or what he's capable of. You know, you're just like, oh, yeah, he's God.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. Only a sinner.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's the kind of guy that writes that saved a wretch like me. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I mean, there's
really
a real
focus on the wretch,
right? There's a realist that says, "Yeah, I am a wretch." Like Paul's been like, "Yeah, I'm the worst of the worst," but he's like, "But redeemed." You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like he comes on the flip side of the coin and says, "Yeah, I'm not worth much, but Jesus is great, and I feel pretty awesome." And but then there's some guys that just like, "I'm a sinner. I'm a sinner. I'm terrible. I'm terrible." What was Jesus thinking, saving me? You know, like, well, you might be kind of missing it because now it's more about you than it is about Jesus again. You know, and that's kind of a problem.
What do you think, Boova? Can you be that way?
I think that when it comes to pessimism, and I get where you're coming from when you say being critical about what's going on and everything like that, but futuristic pessimism, I think it's doubting God. I think the guy that walks up and says, you know, yeah, we could do that, but it might fail entirely. Yeah, we can do that, but here's all the things that could go wrong. It's just like, you know what? If it's a situation that we can get involved in and there's a possibility of the glory of Christ coming out of this, do it and let God work through it and don't put your human fears into it because God is bigger than anything you do and any fears that you have.
I don't know that every doofus with that loves Jesus and has a crappy idea should go into it full bore and be like, the Lord will redeem this.
I'm not saying that, but I'm talking about...
It's the nude run of 2014. Redeem it.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that every idea should be followed because of that. And where does the glory of Christ come through with, hey, let's go run naked through the streets?
Hey, that wasn't my suggestion. It was yours.
Yeah. I'm the one who came up with the nude run. You're right.
Halfway to dust, boys. Get it running.
No, I'm saying that if someone, so a committee's come together and they've talked about something, they want to do it, but then there's just some random dude that is just like, well, I know that everybody agrees about this and it probably could be a good idea, but here's all the stuff that completely could fail
okay.
and we shouldn't do it.
Follow me on this example, okay? There's a group of people, a fairly large group of people. I mean, lots of folks. And they're like, hey, let's party and get together and stuff. And let's be married and be given in marriage. And then there's a guy over here building a boat. He says, hey, man, it's going to rain. It's going to rain. Don't do all that stuff. You should get on the boat. And they're like, no, we got this committee got together. And that guy's kind of crazy. And he's a downer. Let's all celebrate and be given in marriage. What are your thoughts?
All right. So in the case of Noah... maybe the biblical downer being told by God that something was about to happen was rightfully pessimistic of, hey, guys, I know you're doing that, and I know that some crazy stuff's going, yeah, party, party, party. But seriously, we should talk because there's a flood coming. Yeah, you know that huge boat I'm building? I'm not just bored. There's stuff going on that we're all going to die. Yeah? No. Okay, you go have fun. No, I'm not saying that. That was God telling that man that's going to fail. I don't think the dude that's just like, hey, man, you know, I know you guys have this great idea, and I know that this could happen, but here's all the failures that could happen.
It's probably the
I don't
wrong
think
kind
that's God saying, all right, John, let's talk for a second. So you know how your church is planning on doing that whole thing, right? It's going to fail. It's going to fail miserably. You need to tell them, go build a boat if you have to. Just tell them it's going to fail. I don't think that's happening.
Okay, here's the deal. This question's about me. I'm trying to figure out whether I'm all right. Because here's what I hear this committee business from Boova, and I'm like, people are... They're ridiculous. Like, they get in a pack of 10 people, and they make these outrageous plans, and they don't know anything about it. Like, hey, we're going to set up a sound stage, and we'll have a bunch of bands, and then they'll be like, great. And then they go ask the guys and be like, hey, we need bands. Where do we get bands? Go have someone else get bands. You know what I'm saying? Like, the idea people drive me nuts because they have no implementation. I'm the pessimist man. This question's about me. I can't stand broad thinking.
I think that's why God made all types of people. Some people have to have the big broad ideas, and someone else has to come in and say, yeah, this is how it's really going to work. And some of that is a downer to the dreamer who has these wild ideas of how it's going to work and what it's going to do. And, you know, reality is it probably won't match everything they want to do. And I don't think that's what you're talking about. Well, I mean,
I think that that's a point of view perspective, right? Because some people will look at the guy.
And you need both.
Yeah, when you have the dreamer and the guy and the implementation guy who's the realist, and, like, if you're on the dreamer side, maybe you're not the guy that thought of it, but you, like, really love the dreamer, and you're like, yeah, go for it, dream big. And then you're like, well, that guy kind of ruined it because he implemented it in a way that wasn't what the dreamer wanted, you know? Like, from that guy's perspective, it could be, well, that guy's the pessimist. But it's not really
a floating rock, and you can't produce it. That's what I want. All the nations will know Jesus' name by this floating rock I've concocted.
You know what? Can't afford it. Can't get it done correctly. Whatever. Go through with it. God will redeem it. Love, Troy.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. My real name was used. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Get on the boat. No way, man. This rain is redeeming. This is how
there's no way this could go on for a really, really long time. 2 feet of water. Okay. It might be going on longer than expected.
But it's still going to be fine.
Hey, Mr. Pessimist, build a boat, really?
Well, you know, I mean, the Word of God, there are parts in it that are negative because it does reveal our flaws. So there is that part of Jesus that does kind of pull out our negative traits. So there is some negativity in truth, but you know, you got to communicate.
Well, I mean, here's the deal: look at some of the more unsung heroes of the Bible, right? Like, who's the guy that took over for Moses?
I don't know. He's unsung. Joshua.
Yeah. Okay. So Joshua was known for his for being a military strategist, right?
Yeah, right.
He was well known for that, right? And what he didn't do is get a group of 10 guys on them, and every day he'd go, redeem our battle. And then they'd just bull into there and start taking on dudes, right? Like, he planned things out. He got, he encamped dudes. He put them, he put the kibosh, the double back on a couple guys. Yep. Like, he was a good strategist. And so, like, he didn't just, like, redeem it all and then start bowling in. But then sometimes God's like, hey, man, put him, when he was delving out Gideon's army, Gideon had a ton of guys. He's like, I can't use all these fellas. I need you to know it was me. So now I am going to get rid of fellas, and you're going to go in there blind, and we'll see what happens. You know, so I you can see God working either way. Like, I feel like he appreciates using the brain that he's given you, but sometimes he really appreciates just the blind faith. Like, I'm purposely going to make this way so you know it was me. You know, so I can see both sides of the coin. But I think the person that we're talking about, which is maybe not quite me to a T, but like, you know, if all you do is see where it's going to fail and you can't get excited about anything in the kingdom of God, then yeah, I think you do have a problem, right? Like, because you really don't trust anyone besides your own opinion. And that's kind of, it's okay to be opinionated, but you just have to know when to back it off a little bit and know that you, God didn't take all of his knowledge and then put it onto you, and you're the only guy that needs to be listened to.
Right, because I guess in a vision like that, all you are is building up I told you so's, right? Like, and if that's the shining spot in your world is for something else to go poorly, and you were the guy that identified that would go poorly, and like, that's your vindication.
I told
in life,
you.
Yeah, that's stinky. That's a stinky existence.
Actually, I've met some guys that I was actually really blown away with where I've been dead wrong, and they were, I mean, they were right on. It wasn't Dan like he's thinking. But,
I was going through my file cabinet.
But like, they had a complete chance to put it right back at me, and they didn't. It just went by. They never even mentioned it, right? And like, I was more humbled by their silence than I was by anything they could have said. And like, I was just blown away by the fact that I had made a big deal out of something. I was dead wrong. They said absolutely nothing about it, and it never came up again. And it was amazing. Like, and I felt like God was going, see? Now God gave me the I told you so. I told you to shut up, Mike. You know, like, I felt like I was being convicted directly instead of by a third party. So I don't know. It seems like it was pretty redeeming. But anyway, I don't know. I was thinking about it. I get involved in a lot of conversations, and I'm generally the negative man in it. And so, like, I was trying to figure out, did God design me this way, or am I being sinful all the time?
I just think you have to be careful that you don't go overboard. You have to, you know, he's given you a gift to look at the black and white, and then, you know, you make your case and kind of step back. Don't get so into it that everybody's wrong if they disagree with you or something.
Or
even if they are wrong.
I could hire a PR man. Have him flower it up. I say what I want to say, and then he says, Mike agrees. He just cleans it up on the other end. He's like a filter. You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org broadcasting. Every Monday nights from 10 to 11. The show is really flying by. I know it feels like that from this chair. Right here. I'm just going to take over host duties. Dear Live from the Path. Let's see. Oh, no. Man, I didn't screen them. After 25 years of marriage, my wife no longer wants to shave her legs. She is starting to look like a gorilla. I think it's a slap in the face. She says it has nothing to do with me. I don't know if I should move to another zoo or buy her some bananas. I don't know what to make of this fella. Anybody?
Yeah, this is really pretty easy. I'm going to pretend that they're both Christ followers, and so number one, you made a vow to God. Get over the fact that, you know, if your wife has become an ape, well, that's just life. Then you can take the biblical thing and husband, love your wife. It's probably his fault somehow, somewhere. He's not meeting her needs some way, and she's just going crazy, and now she's growing her hair out.
Could
know.
He say that it's not right to be in relation with a gorilla? And therefore, plead biblical no-ness.
No.
I'm just playing counterpoint, boys. Go ahead, Booba.
No one has ever put in perspective the amount of immaturity I have when it comes to love, because now I know that I'm not in any way ready to get married. Because if I'm supposed to just be like, hey, man, your vows say if she turns into a gorilla, deal with it. I am not ready to make that commitment.
They don't tell you that in the premarital
process. Right, exactly.
Well, it's they do. Like, no one listens. Dude, so they all like, go, yeah, yeah.
No,
I
yeah. I fully understand that I'm a young guy, and I know that I'm just, I don't think, I know now that I'm not ready for marriage, because I'm not ready to just sit back and go, well, she's kind of turning into a gorilla, but... I made a vow.
What do they say? Every
sweetheart,
7 years
I love
or so?
You and your really, really long leg hair. I don't know if I'm in a place to say that yet. So yeah. Thank you, Dan, for putting that in black and white for me and making me fully aware that I'm not ready to get married.
Boy, there's some good ones here. You want to hear the secular advice?
Yeah. Wait, so what's our real? This guy comes. What's the direct advice?
He needs to get over it.
Yeah, actually, I'm kind of mad at him for even sharing that with the world.
Yeah, I don't need to know about it.
Yeah, that's your own house's business. I mean, if you want to talk to another trusted man that says, hey, has this ever happened to your place? And he's like, no, man.
I tried. They were real negative.
Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do, assault her in the middle of the night with a razor? I mean, you're kind of you need to way overdo it, make her feel love to the point where she even wants to do this.
Okay, let me
you.
Ask you this question. Let's say a woman writes in and she says, my husband's nose hairs are out of control. What do I do?
He's just a butthead. See? I mean, that's outrageous.
See? You're not telling her to deal with it.
Yeah, because he knows better. I mean,
she needs to do it. She needs to take care of herself, too.
Yeah.
But you don't go find another ape or what do you say, go to another gorilla.
Another zoo?
Another zoo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's
get
yeah,
her
that's
a banana.
Right.
Yeah. When your mustache and your nose hairs lock arms as one, you've let it go on too long. You know what I'm saying? You
need the grossest thing I've ever heard.
You need to clean that business up. There's no reason for that kind of behavior.
I will never have a mustache again.
Here's what the secular says about the gorilla thing. This may be your wife's way of rebelling, just as some retired men forego shaving because they no longer have to. That's what happened to Santa. Or the winters in Poughkeepsie may be so cold she feels that she needs the insulation. That's outrageous. Stay in the zoo you're used to. After all, it's home. Hold on. If it's causing problems in your marital relations, close your eyes and pretend it's cashmere.
What?
That's terrible advice.
That is the worst.
Wow.
Wow.
Here we go. Dear Live from the Path, I recently went on a first and last date with a gentleman. He ordered himself a beer and a prime rib dinner. He never asked me if I wanted anything to eat or drink. As flabbergasted as I was, I have a theory. Men today are different from those of the past, and my guess is because the pierced and tattooed gals today speak and act like sailors, therefore ruining it for the rest of us. Am I right?
No.
No.
No. It is not the women of the world's fault that men act like little boys all the time.
No, there's no way. I mean, you have to literally be raised like John the Baptist to go to a dinner with a woman, order yourself a beer and a steak, and make no mention of anything that she wants to eat.
Does the server not ask her?
Did he say like, "Hey, eyes over here, waiter. Prime rib, beer. Be gone."
We order through me. She'll have nothing.
Halfway through the steak. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want something?
Yeah. I mean,
awful.
Seriously, he's a cartoon character. That's the deal. Right. There is nobody on a first date that's that bad.
Oh man.
No one has a defense for this man?
No,
absolutely.
Nor her.
Not.
I mean, it's her fault she didn't order anything.
Well, yeah. What about her assertion that it's because of the tattooed gals and that talk like, or it says act like sailors. Therefore, I mean,
they get to eat more?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't understand the defense. I don't get it. Why is she bringing that up? What does that have to do with anything?
I don't know. Maybe she thinks that generally ladies are not ladylike if they have tattoos and act like sailors and stuff
I think she's
and
saying,
that's caused.
Yeah, the ladies, like the modern woman has caused the Dutch treat, caused the chivalry to go.
She probably wanted him to order for her.
Right, and therefore now ends up at this man who literally acts like you're not even there. He's out to dinner by himself.
Hey, I'm really pursuing a relationship. By the way, you're not eating. It's like, wow, this was great to start out with.
Boy, this really stinks for this woman because now like she has a no relationship with either gender class. She's dealing with a real doofus of a man and has otherwise taken the she's accosting the women for having turned him that way. This is a very lonely woman.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a pretty shallow view. In fact, I had a guy ask me this week. He's like, "How does God feel about tattoos?" I said, "Well, what are they of?" And he showed me one. I'm like, he goes, my old church said that these tattoos were wrong, and it was like a heart with mom in it. And I said, "Well, I said I'm not really sure where in the Bible it says that God hates hearts or mothers." But
does
so
she have hairy legs?
But so far, I said I think you're more than welcome to come talk to Jesus at some point. I think we're fine. He goes, really? Because I've always heard that it was just wrong, just really wrong. And I haven't been going to church, and I feel like they were getting mad at me. I go, for what? They don't speak for Jesus. Talk to Jesus about it. I think you're all right. I wouldn't worry about it. He's like, he goes, this job's a pretty good job. I heard that you can't be rich. I go, what Bible do you read? He goes, Well, I don't currently read the Bible. I said, don't ever come back to me with this stuff claiming what the Bible says and you haven't read it. I said, that's terrible. That's just terrible theology. Man. And I thought, and then I almost asked him. I wanted to know whose pastor was. I was like, call him up. Say, listen, I don't know what you teach at your place, but you're ruining people. Anyway, moving back off the tattooed subject. Here's it. Secular says, no, she doesn't believe it's the lady's fault. You need to speak up. The rules of dating have changed over the last decades. Many women expect and prefer to pay for their own meal and drinks on a first date. Is that true?
Been a while.
Yeah, I don't have any idea. What do you think, Booba?
I think that there are some independent people and some are not. I don't think it's just diecast as one or the other. I think it just depends on the lady, because I've gone to dates within the last couple of years where I've paid for both of us, and then also I've tried to pay for both of us, and then the gal was like, no, I'll pay for myself.
See, now I go out on business lunches with other dudes and I want them to pay. I mean, I feel like it has. If it's our first meeting out, I really want them to pick up the check.
Man, if that's anything like a date, I don't want to go to your business lunches.
Yeah, yeah.
I think my daughters would, if it was like a first date and the guy didn't pay, they probably would not be a second date.
That's what I think,
too. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. That's how I was raised as well, is I am the one who pays for it. It's nothing to do with...
They want him to man up, be a man.
Right, exactly. You know. It's nothing about equality like some people say. It's ridiculous. It's just, hey, I was raised that hey, we're on a date. I would like to pay for you, and it's my responsibility.
I almost always pay, not like even if I invite some guy for coffee or whatever. Yeah. Like, if it's a regular meeting, I'll probably pay the first 3 times or so, and then, like, you know, then they'll say, no, I got it, and then that's fine. But, like... I don't like the thought of saying, hey, why don't we come out? I'm going to get something. Nothing for you, eh?
Yeah, that is awkward.
I'm going to invite you out to eat, and then you need to pay
like,
for yourself.
That's a crappy way to start a meet with somebody, is like the awkwardness of what's going to go down with the check. So, I mean, I'll just take care of it.
A lot of people feel obligated to like pay the pastor's, you know, meal, and I'll go on meetings and... Like the first couple times, they're like, oh, I got this, you know. And finally, I'm like, here, you know, if we're doing this every week, this is a little bit ridiculous. Yeah. I'll go ahead and get mine.
Yeah.
They pay me now, you know. I can handle this.
You pay for your own lunch.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah.
Here we go. One more. Ready?
Yep.
Dear Live from the Path, would it be a breach of etiquette to enclose a self-addressed stamped blank thank you note with gifts I plan to send to my grandchildren? Since they do not respond, would I mail them gifts or cards?
Yes. That is inappropriate.
That is the greatest thing that you could possibly do for your grandkids.
Well, I mean, how blind, how purposefully blind do you have to be to get that thank you card in the mail and be like, oh, bless their hearts. They're so thoughtful. They returned the self-addressed stamped envelope thank you card to me that I wrote.
Yeah, maybe they should just write, like she can include a note in there that says, thank you, Grandma. Love you so much. Love, and then they just wait for the signature. They can sign it like they're a CEO at their own company.
And then she's going to write in next year and say, I keep sending these self-addressed stamped envelope with pre-written thank you cards, and all they have to do is fill out their name, but they don't ever do it. Yes. Is it okay for me to put their name on it?
How old are these kids? If they're like 5 or 6 or something, I mean, you should drop that.
Ridiculous grandma.
I don't care how old they are. Either, like, if you want a legitimate thank you, try to get them, I don't know, talk to. I think that's okay to talk to them about it. Hey, man, I sent you a gift. Customarily, you should send a thank you note. Grandma loves to see that stuff from you.
I'm not a big fan of passive aggressiveness, but I would passive aggressive this one. I would call and say, did you get my gift? Yeah, I got it. I thought it was great. I just didn't know.
Because I didn't get your thank you note back?
Yeah. Yeah.
My advice to Grandma is to go ahead and get on Facebook or whatever it is the kids are doing now, and that's how she'll get her thank you. They're in a different generation now. I bet your kids, they haven't written a letter. They don't even know what that looks like.
I've never sent a piece of mail in my entire life.
There we go.
I'm not kidding. Yeah. I've never once filled out an envelope and sent a piece of mail to
that's
anyone
why they keep
in my
kicking
entire
you
life.
You got to pay the rent.
You'll never win the sweepstakes, Booba.
Yeah.
I understand that. I've weighed the consequences.
No wonder Sports Illustrated won't send you that free issue.
In fifth grade, we learned how to correctly write, or not fifth grade, somewhere before there. But we learned how to correctly write letters, and I'd never sent one ever in my entire life. My parents either sent all the thank yous and Christmas cards, or I just kind of called the person. Yeah. Hey, got your Thanksgiving card. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
We can just talk right now, and we can save ourselves the 3 weeks of waiting for the card.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you got to continue the awkward conversation after Happy Thanksgiving.
Dude.
So, how you been?
Pretty good. You have turkey?
Yeah. I love my grandparents. I really do. But when it comes to any kind of conversation, it does not matter how it starts. It's going to turn awkward.
Yeah.
So there's no difference.
So did you get those undies I sent you, Troy?
Sure did, Grandma. Did about fit? Four sizes too small.
Do they
appreciate
fit
you.
Good? Yeah, they fit all right. You
know? Hey, when you come over this year for Christmas, can you make sure you lay on the floor?
Yeah. I suppose I can do that.
Thing,
we heard a crack the last time you sit on our couch. It's getting awkward. We don't know how to... We don't know how to nicely ask you not to sit on our furniture. And we figured it'd be awkward in front of the rest of the cousins, so we thought we might just call you preemptively and say, hey, when you come here, shoes off, floor. Love you, Grandma.
Yeah. So,
see you at Christmas. I'll be the gentleman laying on the floor.
Hey, sweet, 2 5-pound dumbbells. Thanks, Grandma.
Hey, Grandma. Appreciate that. Hey, a shake weight, huh? You want me to work out because I work at a call center, right?
That's real handy.
Here's shoes 3 sizes too small. It's like, oh, I didn't realize I could barter my shoe size. Cool. Just going to shove my feet in there and then tell you, oh, great. And then 3.5 minutes later, they will burst off of my feet. Appreciate you.
And then you'll be mad because there's parts of my shoe on the floor.
Hey, I got you this denim jacket. It's like... That was a terrible decision. It's about 6 sizes too big, but it was like $3.
Yeah. Richard Marx said it was cool.
Hey, did you see that Wolverine movie? You look like him.
Exactly like
Thanks,
him.
Thanks, Grandma.
We make him sleep on the floor, too.
We make him sleep. Yeah. He's like made of metal. He could break our he could break our couch, too. You should probably sit down.
I don't care how much you make. You're on the floor, Jackman.
It's like my, my cousins are like, hey, dude, why do you always sit on the floor? It's like, I'm not going to talk about it with you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to explain the fact to you that our grandparents think that I should sit on the floor. Yeah.
I just walk up, I spin around in a circle 3 times, and I sit.
And come here, boy.
And it's normal. Come here, boy.
When everybody leaves the room, I check the garbage. Make sure there's nothing cool in there.
Any chance you guys can bring some food from the table down to here?
Sometimes I'll take a sock when no one's looking.
Well, the sad thing is I think all my cousins think I'm just that lazy. They're like, I cannot muster the physical energy to hold myself up in a chair for a couple hours. I have to just...
Pass out on the floor. I drove all the way here. What do you want from me? I'm hitting the floor.
I got nothing left. You know what I did today? I woke up.
Come on, man.
What more do you expect from me, people? Oh, man, I love my
2014
family.
2014's here, Troy. This is going to be the best ever.
Oh, yeah, buddy. I can't wait to walk up, bring my own chair, be like, I'm not going to break this one. Crunk.
I also brought my own portable linoleum mat. Is that going to work for you? Anything else I can't do here?
Do you guys mind if I work out while I eat the turkey?
You should totally bring novelty-sized things with you. Like a novelty-sized toothbrush. Look what I got.
You need me to sign some thank you cards?
Or like random quirky stuff. Just like show up with crunchy peanut butter and a spoon and just... Yeah, like all weekend.
See, that's what I'm saying. I really want to confirm their thoughts of how ridiculously obese I am and how I'm not doing anything to change at all, even though I've lost like hundreds of pounds. Like, I don't know. Seriously, I don't know when I'm going to be able to walk into that house and someone is not going to look at me when I go for seconds. Like, I've literally been told.
Are you sure you need that?
I kid you not. I've been asked, ooh, second helping of potatoes, huh? Yeah, that's there's third, a whole actually. Crock pot full of them for everybody. Everybody else is up there. Any chance I can walk up there too? Are you sure you really need that? It's like, are we sure that any of us need this? Like, it's not like I'm the one who's going to benefit the most from this. Like, everyone is eating, right? Oh, I think I'll have the salad.
Yeah, as long as you don't sit on the couch with it.
I feel like I'm going to hurt their feelings. It's like, I know you slaved over this meal for hours upon hours. But I'm going to have the salad. Is it okay if I have a biscuit? Just one, though. Just one.
You know what? That's probably the catch 22. As soon as you don't eat it, they're like, man, even Troy didn't eat it.
Right? Exactly. They're like, dude, Troy didn't even go for seconds on those potatoes. They're probably not that good.
They must be terrible.
That dude goes up for seconds for anything. Like, go grab a second cup for no reason.
Did you see him eat a novelty-sized pin earlier?
Yeah.
He brought his own jar of crunchy peanut butter.
Jar of crunchy peanut butter. He smothered it on the biscuit. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
Keeps asking for a tongue scraper and some Benadryl.
don't know how to handle it.
Do we have any motor oil for this turkey?
You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. No redeeming Jesus content this week, boys. You came in the wrong place.
What was? Did we get the secular advice?
Yeah, secular advice is, she says, I think it's a great idea as a last resort. And no, it would not be a breach of etiquette to do so. She's on board with it. Send that.
This woman's ridiculous.
Notes. That's good times.
They're of the same generation.
What?
Grandma, you're wrong.
What?
Get away from the fact that it's a breach of etiquette.
It's just rude.
It's dumb.
It's waste.
It's dumb.
They won't do anything with them.
It's like ordering myself a candy bar for Father's Day and then delighting in the blessings of my children.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, guys. Ordering yourself flowers. I honestly feel like if I ever received a already filled out self-addressed envelope that had a thank you card, I would do everything I could to just completely sabotage the thank you card and then send it back.
Yeah.
Just mess up all the grammar, which my grandparents would hate that, and just completely just make it awful and then send it back. See if she ever opens it.
That's the ruination of the world is the type of person that would sign that and send it back.
Right.
Because like,
hey man, this looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to sign this. Yeah. Grandma. Here you go.
I get to be thoughtless and lazy? Heck yeah. Wait, where's my stamp for my signature?
All I have to do is sign right here and I look like a great grandson? Awesome.
Yeah. All right. You got one more, Mike?
Yeah, here we go. Dear Live from the Path, may I share a pet peeve of mine? I wish you'd raise the consciousness of people who write obituaries and fail to mention the musician who provides the music for the funerals and memorials. The musician often does more preparation for the services than the pallbearers. Why are their names omitted? I usually want to know who they are when I attend. Okay, remember that pompous dude we were talking about earlier doesn't know how to take it down a notch? Okay, the Lord has blessed you as a musician. You just shut up, play that harp. You know what I'm saying? You got to have top billing in the obituary notice.
So this is a person that's looking at this and saying, okay, so your relative died, but I'm not really worried about them. I just want to make sure you know that I was jamming.
Yeah, because Earl Bosco played piano.
Hey,
thanks,
man.
Earl.
Do you see that harpist at the funeral?
Yeah, dude.
He was awesome.
I'm catching Bosco at the Heffernoffer wedding. He's going to be at the funeral.
He's going to be at the funeral. Yeah. He's probably done way more preparation than the pallbearers. So, he should be on there.
So what we're saying is this guy's ridiculous for there being a broader event where a bunch of people have gathered for a reason other than that thing specifically, but that he wasn't mentioned by name.
Right.
Burn, Foost. I was at the Christmas event at the Life from the Path, and no one gave my name.
Wow.
Now, hold on.
For being his brother, you were awful at mocking him.
No one said Mike Foost is on the show.
Here's the deal.
No one mentioned Mike Foost.
Here's the deal. That this musician man shows up out of nowhere without previously knowing the guest or for being with him his whole life. I, on the other hand, have been with you since the womb, and you kicked me out.
That's true. That's kind
of
harsh.
I know
that's
there's cold. A lot of stuff going on, but if someone could mention my name so that people know that I'm here. Yeah.
Hey, man, that's why I did the announcements. I'm like, people need to know I'm involved.
Listen here.
Hey, Ben, you need anything said? I can do it.
Go like a minute, Mike. Make it happen.
Response is lengthy. Secular says, I can think of a couple of reasons. The first is that some obituaries are actually taken from the eulogy, which may have been written prior to the death by someone in the family. If the obituary is written by an employee of a newspaper, the information may have been taken as part of a standard list of questions about the deceased and any survivors. Frankly, I think it would be more suitable if the musician's name was included on the program. If it hasn't been included, there's nothing rude about telling the officiant or family member how much you enjoy the music and asking you who provided it.
What?
Yeah.
Hey, man, I really enjoyed the tunes today.
Just sobbing, walking out of the funeral. You did a great job.
Now, having done a couple of these funerals, usually the obituary is done ahead of time. It's sent to the newspapers. That's also thrown on the program. The artists are put on the program. It comes later.
I've provided music at funerals before, and when they come up and talk to me, it is flat out awkward. Like it's like being a worship leader, right? This day is not about me. I really prefer that you just kind of enjoyed the funeral and are grieving your loved one and leave me alone. Like I was just.
Yeah.
You're just being helpful, right? Like, if they come up and talk to me and take anything away from anybody else, it's almost irritating. I'd prefer if you just left me out of it.
You shouldn't have. You don't think the guy should be singing and then have like a stand with his business cards and CDs?
He's great.
Yeah. By the way, name's Chris Tomlin. Chris Tomlin.
I'll take. If you like that
right
rendition
here,
of Amazing Grace?
I'm a Grammy Award winner.
I've got it in the background CD.
I'm pretty big around here.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. If you're on KTA, we've got to let you go. Thanks so much for listening. We will see you next week on Live from the Path. These guys are.
What was that, Dan?
I'm just going along. I'm going with the groove here.
That dancing. Wasn't with it at all.
I'm going to make my own groove.
It was against the groove.
Chorus monk.
The only problem with that was it wasn't prefaced by, "You've got the right one, baby." That's what it needed.
That's awesome. All right, man. In rebuttal to what you said, what if the person who was putting on the funeral says, "Hey, great job with the music." Would you get irritated then?
Yeah.
Really? Because I did that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to have irritated. Oh, you didn't do music at my parents' funeral. There was a singer that did music at both my parents' funerals, and I walked up to him and I said, "Hey, man, thank you for that. That was beautiful. I know my parents."
My
parents would have loved that.
I'm not saying irritated, I guess, but like, you still want to take it. Like, I don't want to take your attention away from what the attention is supposed to be at. Like, if you're done thinking about it, it's like, I can't take any more worrying about this today. Thank you for coming out. That's different, right? Like, especially from
I appreciate what you did, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, that's not a problem. But, like, you know, if your aunt from Virginia is like, "You did a great job. Do you have any CDs?" Okay,
I really like that third stanza when you really hit that next you know, key change.
Did you have to sing really all 12 verses of We Three Ships? I mean, seriously.
Did you write Amazing Grace? That was great.
Yeah.
It's like it molded out from your body.
Oh, no. I had one. I actually have one that would fit us perfectly.
That's scary.
Wasn't there something else you wanted to talk about, Mike?
No, that's it. Okay. Pessimistic Jesus,
that's,
man.
Hey, wait. That's the end of the show. No, nothing else. Done.
Are you still looking for one? You guys want to do a quiz?
Yeah, let's do a quiz.
Oh.
Can we get the results this time?
No, I hope so. All right, here we go. Bible, here we go. We're going to talk about boats in the Bible.
Ooh.
Man. Why'd you say We Three Ships?
You want to do this one real quick?
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, girls, it's a girl's doubt about religion put her at odds with parents.
Oh.
Dear Life on the Path, I'm 16 and I come from a devout Roman Catholic family. My parents have taken my brother and me to church every Sunday without fail my entire life. We pray before meals, before school, and at bedtime and other times every day. My room is filled with religious objects. As far as I know, everyone else in my extended family is equally fervent. My problem is I've never felt very religious. Since I was 10, I've challenged the teachings of the church, and I, as I mature into adulthood, I'm beginning to identify as agnostic. When I told my parents, at first they were angry and disappointed. Then they told me I was just going through a phase. I know this is more than a phase. It's a personal belief of mine that they've been trying to bury my entire life. I can't continue letting them ignore the real me. The stress of constantly having to lie to my parents about my faith is tearing me apart to the point that it interferes with my schoolwork and social life. How can I convince them that this isn't a phase and that I'm not the Catholic girl they want me to be? If they continue to refuse to acknowledge my religious beliefs, who can I turn to for support?
Mm.
What do you do about it? Now, let's say this blindsides you, right? As a parent, you had no idea. As far as you know, everything was cool. Is that even possible?
Oh, yeah.
Is it possible to raise your kids in a Jesus home?
Yeah. I believe, well, here's why I say that. Okay. I believe that the classic mistake they made is, and I was thinking it, and then she used the word, they taught her religion. They never introduced her to the living God and a relationship with the Savior. Huge difference. I mean, she had this checkoff list. Yeah, we pray. Yeah, we do this. I have stuff in my room and artifacts. That's nothing. That's nothing. We went to church. That's great. But if you do all that and you don't have a relationship with Jesus, it never becomes your faith. It's just gone. It's over. It's over. And somewhere along the line, the parents, I think, probably meant well, and maybe they just didn't. They weren't equipped or something. Something they didn't know. Maybe they didn't have personal relationships. They were just going through the motions, doing religion. You can't pass on religion. You can't. Because my religious style might be different. You can pass on relationship. It doesn't matter what the style is then. It's as long as you got the relationship with God.
You know, actually, that's a decent point. Is what she didn't mention is how God has disappointed her, or how God as a creator is not, she's not buying into it, right? She basically listed all the byproducts of a religion and said, "I don't like these."
Sure, he's already not real. He's just, this is stuff that we do. We do these things.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll wait for you to be done checking your phone in our radio show. Go ahead.
I'm done.
Okay. What are your thoughts on this, Booba?
So, at 16 years old, and this is from personal experience, I thought I had a relationship, but I had a religion, and I completely agree with that. That was the problem. She's going to have to make the choice for herself. Her parents have already failed her, like we said, already failed her in instilling religion in her, not a relationship. But she's going to have to make the decision for her. Her parents shouldn't freak out about that. I get that we want to raise our children in a relationship with Christ, but that's a shortcoming on their parents. And if they're freaking out at her because of the fact that, you know, they were just appalled that she doesn't want to go to church anymore and she's agnostic and things like that, that's to be expected in this circumstance. Hopefully she gets into a place where she has someone who can explain the relationship portion of it and actually explain the living God to her. But at 16 years old, there's a lot of turmoil that's going on, and this is just one more thing that she's probably incredibly confused about.
I would encourage her to find a friend who goes to a youth group of a Bible-believing church. I mean, she's 16. She has to do her parents.
Right.
I get that. Mm-hmm. Do the Catholic church thing on Sundays, but go to youth group with a friend before you give up on God.
Right.
You know, at least see who God really is and then make a decision.
So agnostic is where you believe in a higher power, just not one specific one, correct? Am I wrong on that?
No, agnostic tends to be you're not invested one way or the other.
Oh, okay.
So an atheist is strongly opposed, and agnostic is like, meh.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't really care if you, like, an atheist is against what you believe in, what you believe, and agnostic is like, you know, whatever, just stay out of my way.
Gotcha.
Leave me alone. And I think it's important to validate the fact that, like, whatever she's feeling is what she's feeling, right? Like, you might as well be dealing in truth. If she's talking about, you know, I'm having to put on airs for my parents and try to, it's affecting my studies or whatever. That seems kind of weird, though. Like, you're trying to do your math and you're like, well, no, I really do believe in Jesus, Mom.
Number seven.
Do you believe in Jesus at 7 o'clock?
Yes.
But you might as well deal with reality, right? Like, let's say I raised my kids and I feel like I gave them a good example and I introduced them to Jesus and I feel like there was a connection there, and one of my kids shows up and they're 16 and they're like, you know, Dad, I don't really believe in that stuff. I'm not connecting with it. Like, what good does it do me to be like, oh, yes, you do. You really do believe that. I mean, that's just foolishness. Jesus always deals with us in honesty about our sin, about our lives, about who he is, about who we are. And I think it's kind of foolish to, I don't know, if you could control it, your kid wouldn't be in that position, right? You would have controlled it by then. You would have puppeted their faith. They would have been fine. You wouldn't be in the position that you're in with them saying that they have doubts. If you had that type of control over it, you would have controlled them to the point where they don't express that. So you might as well deal with it honestly without necessarily giving it don't treat it like the agnostic belief is on par with following Christ, as if it's an equally valid thing. But there's no reason to, I think, to act like what they're thinking is not what they're actually thinking. That's where they're at. And I think that's kind of a mistake, because sometimes, like, when we're disappointed, and it could be a faith thing, could be anything. But as a parent, if you get disappointed with your kids in a decision they're making or something that they're thinking, you know, a sour face and a disagreement doesn't tend to change their mind. Oh, Dad disagrees. Maybe Jesus is real. You know, like, they've seen it. And so the question is working from where they're at, just like you would work with someone who didn't believe, and then and walking them through what that looks like and what that relationship is, and reintroducing them to Jesus. But I think that the denial of that, I don't think that helps anybody. And it kind of perpetrates the religion aspect of it. It perpetrates the thought of emotions as opposed to a relationship. So,
yeah, here's what Secular says. Your parents should not have minimized your feelings by saying they are only a phase because it was dismissive. That said, you must not allow their devout faith and your lack of it to become a contest of wills or basis for argument. This is an important time in your life with your parents as you enter adulthood. Thank them for the great foundation they have given you. Tell them you hope they will continue to love you as you explore what your beliefs are on this spiritual journey, because it is a journey. The opposite of faith is not doubt, it is certainty. Ding! That's a winner. Certainty.
Yeah.
That's tough. I think I would handle that inappropriately. I guess I never even thought of the fact that one of my kids come up to me like, yeah, Dad, I don't really buy this Jesus thing. I would probably be upset. I would probably not, the first thing out of my mouth would not be God honoring. It would be, what? but after I thought about it, I think we could probably have a pretty decent conversation about, I'm interested to talk about this with you when you get a chance. So,
yeah,
you know, yeah, I mean, I think that's a good conversation to have.
And it's actually, it's a very fruitful conversation, I think, ultimately in the health of someone's faith. I think to the extent that, I mean, there's some, I consider them fortunate, like folks who can grow up in a household that, that follows Christ and they have that relationship, and like there's never a point in where they have where their faith is questioned severely. But sometimes like those valleys in people's lives is the time not is where you're really being honest with God and saying like I don't know, like I feel like I know and I feel you know I understand it, but like right now I'm like I'm at an I don't know, and like that's the time where you've actually opened your life to God and saying I'm being honest with you, you know, help me to see you clearly. And that's different than someone who has that thought and says, nope, definitely Jesus.
Yeah, everything's.
Because like that's not an honest. If I was like that with my wife, that's not an honest relationship. I don't know what would make that an honest relationship with God either.
Yeah,
He made you. He's well aware of the proclivities of doubt that exist in your mind.
You know, and actually, I'm kind of blown away by the amount. I had some really good conversations this week with some folks about Jesus who don't know who He is. And, like, I was really blown away by the things that they said of why they did not believe in it. Like it was probably 50-50 split. 50% of them had gone to church and said, nope, not for me. And then the other 50% had never been at all, you know? And, like, the different stories that came from each side, it was just fascinating to hear. And, like, it didn't take but 45 minutes, and I had it down to, you don't know anything about what you're talking about. Right. Well, I wasn't trying to break him down, but I was like, I mean, you literally, the guy that had gone to church literally misquoted the Bible on about 15, 20 things. Had no idea what he was talking about.
Yeah.
The other guy misquoted what he thought the Bible might say. I said, once again, literally no idea what you're talking about. Like, I mean, if you're going to talk about, you know, not wanting to follow the God of the universe, I said, you're going to have to at least know who He is. And I said, right now, you have an opinion formed by other people of who Jesus Christ is. And I'm telling you, you got the wrong end of the stick. Like you've developed your opinions from a bunch of religious, rule-toting, you know, judgmental churchgoers, right? That's not Jesus, right? That's not what He's offering. And I said, you're scared to death that He's going to take away any joy in your life. And I'm telling you don't even know what joy looks like until you let Him do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a really good conversation, but I don't know. Like I'm almost blown away by like sometimes I don't see it because I attend a body of Christ. Like I don't like our conversations are fairly straightforward about Christ, and like I don't see some of the ways that people get off the path until I actually go in and talk to them, and I'm like, man, I'm really disappointed. Like that's not in the Bible at all. What you're saying, none of that is in the Bible.
And it's you know it's weird how situations start to hit you differently. I was reading last week in 1 Kings, 2 Kings, right? And so it's talking about Solomon. And it's all these cool things that are going on in Solomon's life, and then all of a sudden there's just like a turn. And like I was looking at my notes, and at some point I had made a sad face next to a section of scripture, and I'm like, next to the word really question mark, like at the point where he starts getting all the wives, and he's actually, I mean, physically building temples. This is the man that overlaid, did the work himself in the temple, the gold work inside the Holy Holies. Like this, he did that. And he's building temples to these other gods, and you're like, what? And usually you'd be like, well, that's ridiculous. But like, it actually made me sad. I'm like, what happened? What happened that you ended up there? Yeah. And you start to see things just a little differently when you see people thinking. You're like, I feel sad for whatever circumstances brought you to that place. You know what? I had the weirdest experience. I was in Texas last week, and my one of my other brothers was using my car, and I got in there, and there was a CD in the car, and I don't know where the CD came from, but like had some songs that maybe I listened to, I don't know, probably 8-10 years ago, but I hadn't listened to for a while. There was some rap music, some pretty heavy rock on there, and so like I'm letting the tune cycle through, and I'm listening to these songs, and there was like 4 Eminem songs, right, by the rapper Eminem, and I'm listening to these, and like, and I thought, I thought these are good, like he's very good. But like I was listening to the lyrics, I'm like, oh man, that's rough. That guy's got a rough. Look at how he has to look at life. Like look at what life has dealt him, or the life that he's in, and like there's such an absence of joy in a lot of that. And like I don't know. At the driving home, listening to Eminem, I was kind of sad. And it was just it's a weird feeling to be thinking, oh man, I wish I could talk to that guy.
I wish you didn't feel that way.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I wonder I wonder who's ever talked to him. I mean, whatever, big celebrity. Pick anybody, right? But, like, think of that guy's life. He's 40 years old. Who told him about Jesus and what did they say? Like, if ignore the fact that he's a famous guy and him and I were just in a room and I said, what do you know about Jesus? What do you know? What have you heard? And, like, what would he say? And how does that differ from what I've heard and what I think about life compared to what he thinks about life and what he sees? Now, he, like a guy like that, he's grown in some very hard circumstances, right? I grew up in a, you know, I don't know, it was an apartment complex. It was relatively safe. You know, I don't know hunger. I don't know pain. I don't know poverty, really. I don't know, you know, physical turmoil. I don't know. So, like, the what you grow up in is different, but, like, what have I heard about Jesus? What do I know? And what has that guy heard about Jesus? What does he know? And how do we look at the world differently because of that? And it was, I don't know, just stuff that was going through my head. Just listen to things on the radio when you take a song or whatever and you think that there's a guy behind that. There's a guy behind that that has or has not heard about Jesus or has and has heard about him in a way that doesn't accurately describe him. And his vision of the world and of who God is and who Jesus is and what that means for his life is based upon what some other guy said. And then how much of that noise is coming from guys who aren't explaining it right? And how much of the guys that could explain it right aren't saying anything? Or are not, don't have the influence to even if they spoke, no one would hear them. Cause like there's book upon book upon book upon book about what a leader is, but on a basic definition, a leader is a guy who's going somewhere and has people following him. That's a leader. Okay? If you have people following you but you're not moving, you're not a leader. If you're going somewhere and no one is following you, you're also not a leader. Like, but if those two things are true, you can lead people. That's it. But like, how much of the noise in the world, even like how people are hearing about Christ, are being said by guys that aren't going anywhere or are being yelled at from a soapbox somewhere and nobody's listening? And so I don't know. I just something I was thinking about as I was listening to it today. It's just a different perspective is you know, consuming art from a guy who also may or may not love Jesus and kind of thinking about that, how that plays into all that stuff. I don't know. It was a weird vibe on the drive home.
Yeah, I bet.
I kind of wanted a hot chocolate.
It's just kind of a different thing to think about the folks around you and think, I wonder what they know about Jesus and where they got it from. You know, I've just had countless conversations, especially at my work, with people who either grew up in the faith and bailed on it, or their grandma was super religious, or what. One guy, I mean, he's just torn, and it was hard because he explained this scenario. It was tough. He goes, my dad was a great guy. He was a nice guy. He took care of people. He was just an awesome guy. He didn't attend church with us. And I said, okay. And he goes, there's this other gal, and she prayed before every meal, and she attended every service on Sunday, and whatever, and she was always there. I said, okay. He goes, they both died when they were 40. Which one of them went to heaven? I said, I can't answer that for you. I said, I don't know. I can tell you what the qualifier is. The qualifier is loving Jesus Christ and being in relationship with him and accepting the gift that he's offering. I said, so does that make church lady a default? I'm going? No. No, it doesn't. Does it make your dad a default? I'm going or not going? I said, I don't know. I don't know where their heart was. I can't answer that for you. And like, his answer blew me away. He goes, thank you for at least being honest, because I grew up, I've been around church people my whole life, and they say that the religious lady goes and my dad doesn't. And I said, dude, I'm sorry that you went through that. I said, but I can't answer that question for you. And I don't think the Bible can answer that question for you. That's a heart question. And if you don't know the heart of either one of them, she could have been putting on a phony religious facade for years. I don't know. I don't really answer that. But like just being honest like that was enough, right? And I'm like, what church do you go to? Why do they say that crap? That's not true. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't know. No one knows. I don't know, you know? So anyway, I don't know. It's I don't know. It just becomes to a point that just sometimes it just hurts. You know what I'm saying? To try to think. It's not like I, you know, put out the correct gospel. My life preaches the gospel of Jesus Christ to the T, right? But it's an honest representation of a guy that's trying. You know what I'm saying? Like, including the failures and including the missteps and including the prideful arrogance that comes with it. But, like, it's still an honest representation of what it looks like to try, not to succeed. And I think people want to see that way more than they want to see the guy, you know, that rocks at it, and they just can't even see themselves in those shoes at all, you know?
Yeah, they don't recognize their own life in the I don't know, the piety community.
Yeah, like that's the truth.
Yeah, they don't see themselves in it, and which is, I mean, That's not to take away from folks who are like loving Jesus and rocking the piety. Piety's got a bad name as if it's a pharisaical problem. It's not. The question is, where's your heart in it, right? Are you putting on airs and then acting like a doofus outside of that? Or is it just a natural reflection of who you are, you know? And here's the deal. Almost always you can tell the difference who's the guy who's the show and the person that's the real deal. Because the person that's the real deal doesn't go out of their way to do that. They just are that way. They just are that way. They don't have to grandstand their piety. It just oozes out of them. They're just people that love Jesus and they're trying hard. And frankly, they seem to succeed at it better than you do. And that's going to happen. There's going to be a guy who just rocks. You're going to run into like the super dad, husband, father, the guy that thinks of everyone. He remembers people's birthdays. He's, you know.
Yeah, I hate that guy.
I know. He's a sharp guy. And you're like, man, I wish I could be that guy. And you can't. And you know what the deal is? He actually still does love Jesus. And he does serve his kids. And he does serve his wife. And you aren't that. And that stinks that you suck. But he's all right. He's all right. And you don't have to downgrade the guy for being all right. He just is, you know. Yeah. But there's other people that are totally faking that deal, and they're terrible to their wife and kids. But they're putting on a big show about it. But the thing is like you got one thing in common with the super dad guy, and that's you're both living honestly on your faith to Christ. He just seems to be better at it.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah. A little straighten the rest of it out when you get there.
Yeah. All right. I think that's it. Oh yes. Wait. Oh, quiz. You want to quick do boats in the Bible? We'll do boats in the Bible and call it a day.
All right. I'm ready.
All right. Here we go. Number one. How long was the ark that Noah built? 100 cubits, 200 cubits, 300 cubits, 400 cubits.
300 cubits, Ben.
400.
400.
400 takes cake. We'll see what happens. Number two, where did the ark land?
Not Ararat.
Everyone's in with Ararat. Buva?
Yeah. I was waiting for a multiple choice there.
Multiple choice was Mount Horeb, Mount Carmel, Mountains of Ararat, Mount Sinai.
I'm going to go with C.
Okay, mountains of Ararat. Three, where was the boat headed for that Jonah boarded to run away from the Lord? Tarshish, Tunis, Tarsia, Thyatira.
Tarshish.
It's Tarshish. Buva?
Yeah.
Okay, for now, you gotta let Buva answer first.
All right.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Number four, what did the men on the boat do to Jonah? They tied him up. They tried to kill him. They got him to help them to row. They threw him overboard. Buva?
Threw him overboard.
Mike?
Yeah. D.
Correct.
Number five, in Psalms, they that go down to the sea in ships and do business in great waters, A, bring wealth to their children and their children's children, B, should look to the Lord to provide for their families at home, C, should see that their families are cared for at home, D, see the works of the Lord and his wonders in the deep.
C.
They that go down to the sea in ships and do business in great waters should see that their families are cared for at home?
Yes.
Okay, Mike?
D.
See the works of the Lord and his wonders in the deep?
Wonders in the deep.
Dan?
Yeah, I'll go with D as well.
Wonders in the deep.
Because I really don't know.
Six, why did Jesus preach from a boat when he preached the parable of the sower? A, the crowd that had gathered was very large. B, he was having a picnic at the lake. C, he was fishing with the disciples at the time. D, he was on his way to Capernaum.
D.
Mike?
A.
Very large crowd. Dan Hudson. Do you need him again?
I'm the tiebreaker, too. Ooh, that's a lot of pressure. I'm going to say...
Parable of the sower. Keep that part in mind.
Yeah. Large crowd, picnic at the lake, fishing with disciples, on his way to Capernaum.
I'm going to go with a large crowd. That's why I got in a boat in the first place.
All right. Large crowd. Number seven, who did Paul take with him on his first missionary journey sailing from Seleucia to Cyprus? John Buva. Check in to see if you've been listening during the Acts sermons.
Is there a multiple choice?
Oh, he needs it. A, Silas. B, Barnabas. Three, Tychicus. D, Luke.
B.
Tychicus?
Yeah.
B.
B, Barnabas the Encourager.
Dan Hudson?
Barnabas.
Barnabas. Eight, what was Jesus doing in the boat when the disciples thought they were going to perish in the storm?
Sleeping.
Sleeping. Everybody in for sleep. The options were praying, sleeping, bailing water, or steering.
Yeah, man. We got real trouble.
Then stop himself. Wait, what am I doing? Stop.
Grab a bucket, you lazy slugs. We going down.
Stop your whining. Forget it. Kind of throws the rest of the story off.
You're
bailing
lucky
water.
I'm still here. I can walk on this business.
Forget it. Chuck the bucket. Pray the Lord to bless it.
You know, that'd be awesome if he's creating water stairs for him to walk off the boat by bailing it out.
The Lord will redeem it. 9. Paul was at sea in a severe storm for 14 days. In an attempt to escape from the ship, the sailors let the lifeboat down into the sea, pretending they were going to lower some anchors from the bow. Paul told the centurion that if the men did not stay with the ship, they would not be saved. What did the centurion do? A. Threw Paul into the sea. B. Laughed at Paul and got into the boat. C. Cut off the ropes of the lifeboat and let it fall into the sea. D. Tied up the men who were trying to escape.
C.
Cut off the ropes of the lifeboat?
Yeah.
Mike.
D. Tied him up.
Tied him up. Dan.
C.
Cut off the ropes.
D's not looking good.
10. When Jesus called James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, they were in a boat with their father, Zebedee. what were they doing? Mending the nets, mending the sail, sorting fish, gutting fish.
Mending the nets.
Mike?
Ooh. Sort and gut are the same option?
No. Sorting, A, mending the nets, B, mending the sail, C, sorting fish, D, gutting fish.
That gets rid of C and D. Everybody sorts and guts at the same time. I'm going A.
Mending nets. The nets. Dan Hudson.
It's in the Bible, Dan.
I know it. I'm debating between. I'm gonna say sorting. I'm mending as well.
The nets or the sail?
Oh, I'm sorry. The nets.
The nets. NIV says nets. Let's check it. Okay. Question 1. How long was the ark that Noah built? We said 400 cubits. That is incorrect. 300 cubits is the answer.
Talk to me. Talk to me, Old Testament.
300 cubits. There's a story Mike told one time about two guys who were right. And Mike was very wrong, and they didn't say anything about it, and it brought about humility.
I said, talk to me, Old Testament, not Buva and Dan are dumb, like I wanted to say. Moving on.
Bitten by your own snake twice a day. Question 2, where did the ark land?
You
said Ararat.
Did you want?
That is correct. Question 3, where's the boat headed that Jonah boarded to run away from the Lord? We said Tarshish. That is correct. Question 4, what did the men on the boat do to Jonah? We said they threw him overboard. That is correct.
Yes.
In Psalms, they that go down to the sea in ships and do business in great waters, we said, see the works of the Lord and his wonders in the deep. That is correct. Taking care of the children was not on the docket.
All right. That'll teach you, Bubba. Get your priorities straight.
Why did Jesus preach from a boat when he preached the parable of the sower? We said, because the crowd was very large. That is correct. Question 7, who did Paul take with him on his first missionary journey? Said Barnabas. That is correct. Number 8, what was Jesus doing in the boat when the disciples thought they were going to perish in the storm? We said sleeping. That is correct. Question 9, Paul was at sea in a severe storm for 14 days. What did the centurion do? We said cut the ropes of the lifeboat and let it fall into the sea. That is correct. Question 10, when Jesus called James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, what were they doing? We said mending the nets. That is correct.
Talk to me, New Testament.
We got 90%. This quiz has been taken 25,255 times since September 8 of 2004. The average score for the quiz is 84%.
Really?
Yeah.
We totally rocked it.
We did.
Shoot, I kind of want to do another one. Okay, we're going to do one more real quick. Clouds in the Bible.
Oh, dear.
Here we go. 10 questions on clouds. This is the way to learn your Bible, boys.
No doubt.
Number 1. How many times does the scripture tell us that the Lord led the Israelites with a pillar of cloud by day and a fire by night? 1, 2, 3, or 4. Buva.
How many times does the Bible say?
Does the scripture say that the Lord led the Israelites with a pillar of cloud by day and a fire by night?
I'm going to go A, 1.
1. Mike.
No, 3.
I'm thinking 3.
I'm saying it's 3 or 4. It's in there multiple times.
It's at least
times.
More than 1.
Definitely more than 1.
I would say 4. We'll say 3, so that seems to be the multiple.
Okay, we'll go with 3. When Elijah's servant went to look for the cloud the 7th time, he saw one. What did he describe it as to... Wait, sorry. What did he describe it as to Elijah? A man's hand, an old man's head, a horse's head, great darkness.
C.
A horse's head.
Yes.
Like the Godfather.
Yes. C.
I laugh.
Final answer.
Mike.
I know nothing of this verse.
I'm going to go with great darkness.
I'm also going to go with great darkness.
I think it's
horse's
great.
Head.
I think it's great darkness. 3. The psalmist tells us that God maketh the clouds his chambers, his chariot, his pathway, his promise. The psalmist tells us that God makes the clouds his chambers, his chariot, his pathway, his promise. John Buva.
Oh, I thought you were... Okay, can you read the question over again?
What, were you scratching your ankle?
No, yes, I was, but no, it didn't... I thought you were reading that as the psalm, not
that's
those four.
That's how well
four.
The Buva knows the psalms.
The psalmist tells us that God maketh the clouds, dot, and dot, dot.
There we go. And then these are the...
His chambers, his chariot, his pathway, his promise, his
B.
ankle.
B.
Chariot. B chariot.
Chariot.
Mike.
Yeah, double up on a chariot, Ben.
Hudson.
Man, I'm going pathway.
You pious jerk.
All right. So Dan has an opportunity for vindication. I'm going with chariot since you two jokers over here decided on chariot. Ecclesiastes tells us, he that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds, A, shall never see the same pattern twice, B, is wasting his time, C, hopeth for rain, D, shall not reap.
Wow. C.
No. That doesn't fit the metaphor at all. It's D, Ben.
He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds hopeth for rain.
That's a good point. That doesn't fit it at all.
D.
D. Can I change my answer?
Dan, agree?
I'm going D.
All right.
Horse's head.
At the transfiguration of Jesus, which of the Gospels does not mention that there came a voice out of the cloud saying, "This is my beloved Son, hear him"? Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John?
Mark.
Matthew. Not Luke, that's all I know.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm going to say John.
I'm gonna choose John because I do believe it's John. I know it's in Matthew. I know it's in Luke. Mark's my iffy one. If ever you're going to leave something out, John has the least consistent with the other three Gospels. Yeah. So I think the safe bet is John. May not be the right answer, but it's a safe bet. Six, the Gospel of Luke tells us that, then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with the Father and the Holy Spirit, the Comforter, the sound of the trumpet, all the saints of heaven, power and great glory.
I'm going to go D.
Power and great glory?
Yeah.
Mike?
I agree.
I'm going with the sound of the trumpet.
Ooh, there's dissension. Power and great glory, another chance for Dan's vindication.
He's wrong about that.
Seven, in the letter to the Hebrews, the writer encourages them, wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of blank, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us.
Dan smells this one coming.
I got it.
Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of blank witness. And its heaviness, glory, witnesses, or vapor.
Heaviness.
It's witnesses.
Cloud of witnesses.
Cloud of witnesses, yeah.
Witnesses.
They're heavy ones.
They're heavy people. They're my people.
They can't even sit on the couch.
No. They were invited into the synagogues, but they were told to sit on the floor. Hey, Hebrews. Get in the corner.
Peanut butter.
In the book of Revelation, John saw a white cloud, and upon the cloud one sat like unto the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown. What was in his hand? A scepter, a sharp sickle, a set of scales, the keys to death and hell.
A sharp sickle.
Mike?
Oh, man. All four of those are in there somewhere. Sickle. No. Keys. Definitely not scale.
Scepter, sickle, scales, death and hell.
Scepter. I'm going scepter.
Scepter, Dan?
Scepter.
I'm with scepter as well.
Sickle.
Nine. What man does the book of Proverbs liken to clouds and wind without rain? A man who boasts of gifts he does not have? A man who promises an inheritance to his children and does not write them into his will?
Ouch.
Ooh. Oh. A stiff burn.
Oh.
A man who undertakes to help a neighbor but doesn't show up to do the work? Or a man who keeps animals and does not care for them properly?
Hey.
A man who boasts of gifts he does not have?
Yeah.
I want to say it's the one who says he'll do work but doesn't come.
All right, Dan. Dan might be on a roll on this deal. We'll see what happens. Ten, final cloud question. What immediately precedes this verse? Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. So shall we ever be with the Lord. Immediately preceding that verse, the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout. The voice of the archangel will be heard. The trumpet call of God will sound, or all of the above?
All of the above.
Mike?
Trumpet.
Dan.
All of the above.
I think it's all of the above.
Thessalonians.
All right, here we
Thessalonians.
go.
Thessalonians.
Thessalonians.
Talk to me, New Testament.
All you right. can't even gloat right, Dan. It just sounds weird.
Fuck to me.
I be right about the summer things. Love Dana Hudson.
Talk to me, New Testament.
Sarah, stick together. Question one. Here we go. How many times does the scripture tell us that the Lord led the Israelites with a pillar of cloud by day and a fire by night? Your answer was three. That is incorrect. Hudson inclination for four was right.
Definitely
one
not.
Is correct.
Definitely not one.
When Elijah's servant went to look for a cloud the seventh time he saw one, what did he describe to as Elijah? We said great darkness. That is incorrect. The correct answer is a man's hand.
Man.
Oh. It looked like a hand of a man.
I was really holding out for a horse's head. It's like, oh, buddy. Yeah. Oh, buddy.
I wasn't confident on the dark one.
Question three. The psalmist tells us that God maketh the clouds his chariot.
Oh.
Correct, sir. Question four. Ecclesiastes tells us, he that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. That is correct. Question five. The transfiguration of Jesus, which gospel does not mention that there came a voice out of the cloud? We said John. That is correct.
Excellent.
Number yes. six. The gospel of Luke tells us that then they shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with, we said, power and great glory. That is correct. In the letter to the Hebrews, we said witnesses. That is correct. In the book of Revelation, Buva, prepare to gird your loins. John saw a white cloud, and upon the cloud one sat like unto the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown. What was in his hand? We said scepter. Buva is correct with a sharp sickle.
Dan, you led me astray.
Here's a scepter.
I said definitely not scales, and then you beast in with scepter.
It may be curvy at the end. He's about ready to harvest the world.
What man does the book of Proverbs liken to clouds and wind without rain? We said a man who boasts of gifts he does not have. That is correct.
Yes.
That is correct.
Boy, Dan, you stink like old cheese.
Taco meat
cheese.
And final question. What immediately precedes this verse? Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. Dan says all of the above based upon 1 Thessalonians. That is straight up correct.
Yeah. He nailed that one.
We got 70%. This quiz has been taken 6,483 times. That's markedly less popular.
Right on.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Since May 22nd of 2005, the average score of this quiz is 61%.
Okay, we did better than average.
Above average.
Holy cat. So just to give you a heads up on what's available here, you got arrows in the Bible, secrets in the Bible, wells in the Bible, leaves in the Bible.
Leaves?
Prosperity in the Bible, wine in the Bible, laughter, weeping, tithing, offerings. There's a lot of good quizzes out here, friends.
All right.
All right.
Hold on. Let me get us out of here.
I didn't put this one on here, did I? I put some weird tunes on here. Anyway, you're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. It's good to be with you. No one even paid attention. If you're on the podcast, thanks for hanging out. We will see you next week. I wasn't going to do a live show next week. We're going to play the Christmas thing, but we might be here. We'll see what's going on in life.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening to Live from the Path. Hope you guys have a good week. Hey, if you got anything you'd like us to pray on, send us an email at info@livefromthepath.org. If you feel like that we've run the show into the ground and it's all is folly, let us know that too. We could use some accountability. Have a good week. Thanks for listening to Life in the Path.
ocean look the best before crash of a wave. This world will try to captivate me. But a kingdom is coming that won't be shaken, can't be shaken. Whatever disaster try to destroy, whatever disease may come, we know. Is love, we know God is love. Know that God is love, whatever may When was the last time I spoke to you? You're the all-consuming fire, the one I cling to. Oh, I need you. Whatever disaster try to destroy, whatever disease may come, we know.
Brisk fall mornings are better with music. Just like coffee is better with Coffee Mate. Click the banner, tell us what song makes your season sweeter, and unlock a whole new playlist. Pair it with our new seasonal flavors like dark chocolate fudge and spice latte, or with old favorites like pumpkin spice and peppermint mocha. Your ears will love mornings as much as your taste buds. Then share the love on Facebook and Twitter. Make the season better with Spotify and Coffee Mate. Coffee's perfect mate.